beers, regular and non-alcoholic. And a Shirley Temple for Davy was busy work, and sometimes it helped. But they should have all been more relaxed. Knowlton had been dead now for several days. All the paperwork was done. There had been a dozen interviews with all manner of law enforcement, and then with major broadcasters and newspaper journalists. The Perry Knowlton story was still holding reign over the internet, TV, and papers and magazines everywhere. That day, however, had not been about Perry Knowlton for Sarah and her friends. That afternoon, they had gathered to bury Hannah Levine. There had been tears of sorrow and regret. The friendship was a terrible thing to lose. And as they'd gathered at the grave after services, Sarah was pretty sure they were all looking back over the years and wondering how the killings at Cemetery Mansion had cost so many their lives and left behind survivors who were emotionally crippled. There was no way out of wondering how they had let Hannah down. Each individual alive was responsible for his or her own life. They knew that. But they also knew human relationships were priceless, and for most, essential for living. Sarah had been named as Hannah's next of kin. She arranged for a really beautiful non-denominational ceremony. Sarah's dad had been Jewish, her mom a Methodist, but Sarah wasn't sure Hannah had adhered to either religion, or any. But she had been left in charge, and Sarah wanted very much to believe in God and goodness and a higher power. She thought the service was not religious, but spiritual. She guessed Hannah would have liked it. After the funeral and burial, they gathered at Finnegan's. And just as they had felt lost before, they were all trying to tie up the last little skeins of confusion in their own minds.
I wonder, I mean, when you were trying to find Knowlton, find out if he could be alive, you found so many other victims. How will you make all that go together?
Sean asked, sipping his beer.
Agents in my office will do what they can to find out what happened where and when, Craig said. Most forensic work does take time. We were incredibly lucky, beyond lucky, considering Knowlton's sudden surge towards suicide and his determination to kill you all, that we did make the right calculations in following his movements.
And we're lucky Sarah got us out, Susie said, lifting her glass of white wine to Sarah. You knew his voice. After 10 years, you recognize his voice, she answered.
And Davy was ready to move quickly, Sean said. To Davy, our hero, Tyler said.
They all lifted their glasses to Davy. He smiled and lifted his Shirley Temple.
To best friends forever, he said, and then grinned. And to Megan, I get to see my girlfriend tomorrow.
Everyone laughed. He passed a picture of Megan around. They all assured him she was a pretty girl, and she was. There was a stretch of silence around the table, and then Tyler spoke.
I really wish we could have taken him alive, he said. There was a lot we could have learned from him. I still want to know how the hell he broke into the playground to be able to display the poor woman he killed, thinking she was our Susie. I do too, Craig said. But since he was aiming at your heart, he had no choice but to fire. You know, he would have shot you, and then Sarah. And then he'd have gone for Davy and killed anyone else in his way until he was stopped. Our agents are still in the hospital. Guzman might be out in a day or two. Luckily, Knowlton didn't really know how to kill someone with a knock on the head. Walsh, the fellow we found in the subway tunnel, will be another week or so. But his prognosis is good. And then there's the cop he shot on the street. He'll be in the hospital for a few weeks. Needs several surgeries. So Tyler, yeah, you shot and killed him. You saved your own life, and probably others.
Sarah made a mental note to visit the agents and the police officer in the hospital. She hadn't done so yet.
How did he find us? Susie wondered.
He wasn't just good at hiding, Tyler said. He excelled at being a people watcher. He was excellent at observation, something he learned, according to earlier notes we recently dug back up from the Horror Park murders, from the man he admired and all but worshipped, Archibald Lemming. The guards had said that Lemming loved to hold court, and Knowlton loved to listen and learn. Patience, Lemming had taught him, was a virtue. So Knowlton discovered the safe house by lurking around in any number of his disguises, and maybe by following one of us. He watched, and he found an agent he could take by surprise. He was adept at so many things, and he was able to bide his time and wait. And, Craig said, we found out that he stole his Adler FBI identification 3 years ago. The man did know how to wait and bide his time. He took Special Agent Walsh down for his plain blue suit, and to keep him from showing up at work. He called in sick on Walsh's phone, left him to die in the tunnel after stealing his gun. Once you all escaped him and he was out on the street, I think he decided he'd kill until he was killed himself. But of course, we were the focus of the rage he's had brewing for the last decade.
They talked a while longer. They enjoyed shepherd's pie. Then Susie and Sean prepared to leave, hugging everyone. We need to keep in touch this time, Susie said. I think we're relieved and grateful and sad, but we will keep in touch. I've missed you, Susie. Yes, we will be haunted by what happened to Hannah, but we'll stay friends this time. And I think it will help, Sarah assured her, hugging her tightly in return. Sean shook hands with Tyler, then the two embraced.
Hey, Boston isn't that far, my friend. We have to all keep in touch, he said.
Tyler nodded.
Yes, of course.
Sarah noted he didn't refute the fact that Boston wasn't far. Her heart sank a little. He was returning to his old life. She would be returning to hers. She thought of the nights they'd been together since Knowlton had died. They had been intense. They hadn't talked yet, not really talked. They had made plans for Hannah's funeral. They had answered any last-minute questions they could for the police and the FBI. It had been easier just to be together. Davy got up from the table. He was anxious to leave. Renee was taking him for a haircut so he could look his best when he saw Megan.
I got a girlfriend, he reminded them all.
Soon after, Tyler smiled at Sarah and asked her softly if she was ready to go. She nodded. They weren't staying at the hotel any longer. They went to her apartment on Reed Street. When the door was closed, he pulled her into his arms and very tenderly kissed her lips. And suddenly, all the things she wanted to say came tumbling out of her mouth. I'm so sorry. I don't know why. I think I was always afraid. Maybe I didn't want to be hurt myself, and so I tried to make sure Davy wasn't hurt. It seemed to be a way to cope. There are bad people out there, or sometimes just rude and unkind people. I just knew how some people felt some of the time, and I love my aunt and Davy and my family, and I... There was really no excuse. I never meant to push you away. I just didn't want others to feel they had to take on my responsibility. His finger fell on her lips.
Some people want part of your responsibility.
Oh, I know that. And I should have had faith in Davy being sweet and wonderful in his own right. To her astonishment, Tyler slipped down to his knees. He looked up at her, eyes bright, and pulled a small box from his pocket. He flicked it open, offering it to her.
Sarah, I've loved you forever. I've loved you when I was with you and when I wasn't with you. When I was away, you interfered with everything I would try to do because I could never get you out of my memory, my heart, my soul. Sarah, we've wasted a decade of life, and life, as we all know, is precious. So, will you marry me?
She was speechless. And then she fell to her knees in turn and began to kiss him. And they both started to shed their clothing, there on the hard wood at the entry to the apartment. When they were halfway stripped, he suddenly laughed, stood and pulled her up.
Let's not celebrate with bruises, he said.
She laughed too, and she was in his arms again. Making love had always been amazing. That afternoon, every touch, breath, and intimacy seemed deeper, more sensual, more erotic, more climactic. He stroked her back, rolled and kissed her shoulder.
I think we celebrated, but you haven't actually said yes.
Yes, yes, yes. She punctuated every yes with a kiss. I can go anywhere. I mean, we are New Yorkers, but Boston is a great city, she said breathlessly. I can and will go anywhere in the world with you. We can have a big wedding, we can elope, we can do anything at all. None of it matters to me, except being with you, waking up with you, going to sleep with you. She stopped, then straddled him with a grin. My lord, I could write romance again. Giant bugs and romance. He laughed, pulled her to him, and they talked and talked and made love again. No big wedding. They weren't going to wait that long. A small ceremony at Finnegan's, applauded by whomever might be there, with just Kieran and Craig and Susie and Sean, and of course their families, including, very especially, Davy and Aunt Renee. Sometime that night, very late that night, they finally slept. Sarah felt that she was walking on air. She'd called Kieran, who was at work at the offices of Fuller and Miro, but she could meet for lunch. Relief was an amazing thing. Or maybe it was happiness. So much time wasted, and yet maybe not wasted. She and Tyler had both grown through the years. And now they were together, and she was going to marry him. It wasn't even that marriage mattered so much to her. That she would wake up every morning next to Tyler did. That wherever they went, whatever they did, she could go to sleep with him at night. She'd loved him as long as she could remember. And now, the morning had been good. She'd worked on her latest manuscript, an Egyptian connection, not through Mars, but through a distant planet, much like Earth. The people had been advanced, kind and intelligent, and very much like human beings. A war with a nearby hostile planet had kept them away, and a shift in the galaxies had closed the wormhole they'd used to reach Earth. But archaeologist and mathematician Riley Maxwell had been with an expedition that had found a tablet, and the tablet had told them about the newcomers, the gods, who had come down from space and taught them building and water usage. Soon after her discovery, she was visited by a newcomer to their group, Hank McMillan, and he had been just as anxious to destroy all that she had discovered. And as they worked together and came under attack by a group with strange and devastating weapons, she'd begun to fall in love. All the while discovering Hank was an ancient alien, trying to close all the doors before the still hostile and warlike tribe arrived to devastate Earth. Of course, they solved it all and lived happily ever after. Her outline was complete. At 11:30, she left her apartment, smiling as she headed toward Broadway to walk down to Finnegan's. Her steps were light. She forgot all about the fact that New Yorkers supposedly didn't make eye contact. She smiled, and yes, people smiled back. It was a beautiful day, chilly, but with a bright sun high in the sky. She was surprised when a police car pulled up by the corner ahead of her. She heard her name being called, and frowning, she hurried forward. Happiness could be its own enemy. She was immediately afraid something had happened to Tyler, or that something was wrong somewhere. Davy, her aunt. She rushed over to the car. Alex Morrison was at the wheel, and he was smiling.
Hey, I'm glad I found you so easily.
You were looking for me? You could have called.
Well, this just all came about. Hop in. I'll take you to Tyler.
Oh, is he all right? She asked anxiously.
He's fine, he's fine. We're working on putting some pieces together. With other events, you know, he said somberly. Anyway, come on. I'll get you to him and Craig.
I have a lunch date with Kieran. I'll just give her a call.
No need. We'll pick up Tyler and Craig and head to Finnegan's.
He grimaced.
I can park anywhere with this car, you know.
Sure, okay. She walked around and slid into the passenger seat and grinned at Alex. You know, I've never ridden in a patrol car, she said. I'll give Tyler a call and then let Kieran know that we might be a few minutes late.
Oh, that won't be necessary, he said, reaching over.
She thought he was going for the radio. He wasn't. He made a sudden movement and backhanded her so hard that her head spun, then crashed into the doorframe. Stars went reeling before her eyes. Shadows and darkness descended over her, but she fought it. Not now. Even as she felt her consciousness slipping away, she struck out.
Damn you, tough girl, huh?
Before he could hit her again, she scratched him, hard. And as the darkness claimed her from his second blow, she knew that, at the very least, she'd drawn blood. Tyler was back in Craig's office at the FBI. The Bureau's analysts had pulled up a number of murders, facts and figures, and they were still going over them. Victims had families, and, Tyler discovered, not knowing what had happened to a loved one was torture for most families. Closure was almost a cliche, and yet it was something very real and necessary. He was frowning when Craig asked him,
What? What now? There's something you don't like? There's something niggling me about that damned poem. I wanted to take Knowlton alive. Yeah, well, better that you're alive, Craig reminded him. But I do see what you mean. Knowlton claimed Hannah. She was dumped in the river. And Susie Cornwall was left in a park. He could have been working on his methods. What he did wasn't easy. Getting himself and a body over the fence, setting the body up, the head in a swing. Have they found any kin for her? Tyler asked. No, but she had friends. Only her friends didn't really seem to have much of anything. No one has offered a burial. Instead of the Potter's Field on this one, I thought the four of us might want to chip in quietly and bury her. Works for me, Tyler said.
He was quiet again. Then he quoted,
But now they pay the price today. 6 little children, one of them dead. Soon the rest will be covered in red. I admit it bothers me too. But I shot and killed him, so we'll never know. Is it possible for us to look through the photographs again? Of course.
Craig left the office. Reports lay on the desk. Tyler started going over them again. DNA. The little vertebra Knowlton had sent to the FBI with his poem had proved to belong to Hannah Levine, not Susie Cornwall. That bothered Tyler as much as the poem. If the bone had just belonged to Susie Cornwall. He started reading the autopsy reports again. So much was so similar. Except, Hannah had alcohol and drugs in her system. Susie, she'd had her medication. Dr. Langley believed her throat had been slit prior to her head being removed. Hannah, hard to tell, with the way her head and torso had been found, washed up from the river. He drummed his fingers on the table. No usable forensics had been found at the park. It was almost as if whoever had done the crime had studied books on how the police found killers. On what little bits of blood and biological trace could give them away. Craig walked back into his office.
I got what I could. I called over to Detective Green, asking if Morrison could make sure we had everything. But Alex Morrison called in sick today. He's not there to help me get everything. But at this point, I do think I have it all.
Tyler looked at Craig, listening to the words. And suddenly he was up and on his feet, not even sure why, thoughts jumbling in his mind. Alex Morrison had been at the theme park the night Archibald Lemming had killed so many in Cemetery Mansion. He'd started out in the academy and had gone into forensics. He knew what was going on with the police and the FBI.
We need to find him, Tyler said. We need to find Alex Morrison.
Sarah came to very slowly. She wasn't at all sure of where she was, somewhere deep and dank. It had a smell of mold and age and earth. She tried to move. She was tied up, she realized, fixed to a chair. Her ankles were bound. Her arms had been pulled behind her, and her wrists secured. Her head pounded. Her arms hurt. She ached all over. The world was horribly askew. She had to blink and blink. Reality overwhelmed her. She was a prisoner, and it was perfectly clear. Knowlton hadn't committed all the murders. They had known something wasn't right. Alex Morrison had been a living, breathing, functioning psychopath all the time. So helpful, so helpful as he used everything that they learned, so helpful as he ever so subtly turned them toward Perry Knowlton. A functioning psychopath? Maybe Kieran could explain such a thing. She tried to move. She realized she could struggle, but the best she could ever do would be tip the chair over. Panic seized her. There was barely any light. She heard a strange droning sound, like a piece of machinery moving. She grew accustomed to the dim light. Blinking, she saw that, 10 feet from her, Alex Morrison was busy at some kind of a machine. She realized, nearly passing out again, it was some kind of a knife sharpener. Battery operated, certainly, but did it matter how the hell it was operated? He was sharpening his knife to slit her throat and then decapitate her. This was where he had killed Susie Cornwall. He'd made the mistake, not Knowlton. He'd killed her here, then he'd used a patrol car to dump her body. Easy enough. People seldom questioned a patrol car in a neighborhood, or an officer checking out a fence or a park, or he turned.
Ah, awake, I see. Oh, Sarah, I could have been nice and seen to it that I dispatched you before, well, you know, before. But then again, your kind deserves to feel some pain.
My kind? She wished Kieran was with her. Kieran might know how to talk to such a man, a functioning psychopath. But Kieran wasn't here. Sarah had to think as her friend might, as any desperate person might think. Think to talk, think to survive, until help could come. But how and why would help come? No one knew where she was. Everyone thought all the danger was over. No one knew. There was no chance of help. And still, she had to hang on. While there was breath, she had once heard, there was hope. And everything suddenly lay before her. Tyler, their future life together that they had managed to deny one another years ago. "What is my kind, Alex?" she asked again. He looked at her, leaning against the shoddy portable picnic table that held his knife sharpener.
"Cheerleader," he said.
"What?"
"Cheerleader. You know your kind."
"Oh my God, Alex. I haven't been a cheerleader in over a decade."
"You were a cheerleader then."
"When?"
"Oh, come on, Sarah, give me a break. That night, at Cemetery Mansion, you were a cheerleader, oh yes. You had your football-playing hunk with you and your retarded cousin."
"Don't you dare use that word around me."
"Whatever."
"Oh, you idiot. That's why people suffer so much in this life. That's the reason Tyler and I haven't been together. How dare you? Davey is an incredible human being, but I didn't believe Tyler really saw that because of people like you, you asshole." She was startled to realize her rage had apparently touched him.
"Okay, okay, well, maybe you're right about Davey. I mean, from what I understand, it was somehow him who managed to bring about the fall of Archibald Lemming. A brilliant man like Lemming."
"A brilliant psychopath and killer, you mean? Not so brilliant, was he? He's dead. And Perry Knowlton, well, what an idiot."
"Ah, but you aren't seeing my genius. Knowlton got sloppy. He got sloppy because he was afraid I would strike again before he could. He wanted so badly to kill you all himself. Not to mention, it was useful to me for everyone to suspect him. I overheard that bit about their stomach contents. Steak. Oh, I loved it. What a cool clue to lead nowhere. The women just both liked steak. I wish that Tyler got a little crazier on the hunt for a steakhouse, but still, so gratifying. I did such a good job. I followed Knowlton, and I learned from watching. I learned my lessons well, and I was a step ahead."
"You're an ass. You killed the wrong Susie Cornwall." His eyes narrowed.
"Well, I won't kill the wrong Sarah Hampton, will I?"
he asked her. "How did you get your victim over the fence?" she demanded. He laughed.
"Databases. I found a way to get a key. I opened the lock. I walked in with her leaned against me, like someone who needed assistance. Maybe you lost something like a cell phone, you know. I just looked like a city worker, a peon. It wasn't so hard. In fact, it was exciting. I had her body leaned against me, her head in a cooler, and I opened the lock and just walked on in. Then, fun. Setting her up, locking the gates again, exhilarating. It was great.
Sarah forced a smile. They will know it's you. You've gotten away with a lot. Let me see. The night at Cemetery Mansion. You thought you wanted to be a cop. That would be a way to see murder and horrible things and get paid for it. You were in forensics and you were called to the scene. And you saw exactly how gruesome all the blood and guts and gore could be.
I admired Archibald Lemming to no end, he agreed. Even as I took pictures of his cold, dead body.
And you knew Perry Knowlton was still alive.
I watched him leave the park.
And you spent the next years trying to find him. Did you?
I did, about a month ago, but I never let on. I just watched, and after he killed Hannah, well, I thought I'd help him along. I have access to all kinds of information. I wanted to give him all the precious scoop I could get my hands on. Then maybe we could become partners. But hey, he ignored me. Ignored me! But now the police and your precious FBI friends are all patting themselves on the back. They think they're all in the clear. Well, I've got you. And before they find you, I'll have your darling Davy, too.
Davy is too smart for you, she said. He was too smart for Archibald Lemming and for Perry Knowlton, and he'll be too smart for you. Alex Morrison smiled.
You try to protect him. Well, you would have. Too bad I didn't have you around before. Oh, but you wouldn't have helped me. The cheerleaders laughed at me, the football players, well, I spent some time stuffed in a locker. Oh, and I had my head stuck in a toilet. And you know what my folks did when it happened? My mother put my head in the toilet, yelling at me to stand up. And my old man, you know what he did? He beat me with a belt. Told me a man would handle himself. Well, I'm handling myself now. I'm ridding the world of cheerleaders and football players and popular people who stuff others in lockers. I mean, come on, seriously. They all need to go. Right? Can it be this easy? Craig asked.
Tyler wasn't thinking anything was easy. Sarah wouldn't answer her phone. She was supposed to have met Kieran. She hadn't. Alex Morrison was nowhere to be found. Craig hadn't tried to placate Tyler. He'd never suggested Sarah was all right somewhere, that she'd just forgotten her phone, that she was an adult and had just gotten busy. There was no lie to believe in, and they hadn't tried to invent one. Time was everything. They didn't have much. They had to find Sarah. But Craig was right. They'd easily used the system to find the patrol car Morrison had been using. And now they were using GPS on his phone. Tyler was functioning. Get in the car, move, walk, use his mind. Find Sarah, find Sarah. But all the while he was fighting terror again. That almost overwhelming terror he'd felt when they'd realized Perry Knowlton had taken down an FBI agent and was heading to the safe house. Did Alex Morrison really believe he could get away with this? Would it matter? Would anything matter if he managed to kill Sarah?
He's here, right on this spot, Craig said, frustrated. We've got the old subway map, but I can't find anywhere that's an entry.
He paused, looking around the street. Tyler did the same. He stared at the map again. He scanned the buildings intently. At the corner was an old stone apartment block. There was a grate, a vent from the massive subway system and underground city below. It was New York. There were grates in sidewalks everywhere. But the building appeared to have gone up in the early 1900s, right about the same time as the subway, and the facade had never been changed. He didn't speak. He rushed ahead of Craig and bent to pull on the grate. It seemed too tight. Craig reached past him, helping him twist the metal. It gave. There was a short leap down to an empty little room. But as his eyes adjusted, Tyler saw an old wooden door. And the door opened to a flight of ancient, worn stairs. He and Craig looked at one another. Tacitly silent, they started down. At least Tyler prayed that he was silent. To him, his heart seemed to be beating loudly in an agonized staccato. Alex Morrison came and hunkered down before Sarah, studying his well-honed knife, and then looking at her with a satisfied smile.
I guess I did want to torture in a way. I mean, I spent days with my head in the toilet due to a cheerleader.
I never did anything to anyone, Alex. I just liked cheerleading. I was good at gymnastics. And Tyler was never cruel to anyone in his life. He worked with a lot of the kids who weren't so good, on his own time. He got the coaches to have special days and special races. You're so wrong. Yes, people can be cruel. Kids can be cruel. We all know that, and to most of us, it's deplorable. I didn't have enough faith in people, but you, you're just a truly sad and pathetic case. Kill me. Do it. But it will never end what you feel. It won't help the hatred and rancor that fester constantly within you.
As she finished speaking, she heard something, but wasn't sure what. Rats? And then she saw. She didn't know how. It seemed impossible. Tyler was there. Tyler and Craig. They had somehow known, had somehow found her. Tyler made a motion to tell her to keep talking. And she realized her position. Tyler was there, yes, and Craig. But Alex Morrison was in front of her, all but touching her. And he had his freshly honed, razor-sharp carving knife in his hands.
You're wrong, Alex was saying. You're wrong. Every time I kill, I feel a little better. I feel I've sent one of you bitches or bastards on to a just reward.
You really should have gotten to spend a lot more time with Kieran Finnegan. She's a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, though her bosses are psychiatrists. She could explain to you that no, you were never going to feel better. I don't really get all of it. I majored in English and mass communication. But there are sociopaths and there are psychopaths. I believe, by the definitions I've heard, you might be the first. I'm not all that sure.
He moved the knife, waving it in an S through the air.
She could help you.
I don't want to be helped.
Sarah had never thought it was possible for such large men to move with such silent ease. But Tyler and Craig had moved across the floor. Tyler was almost at her side. Craig was slightly behind Alex and to his left.
Alex, maybe I don't know. But you know, Sarah, I think that if we'd been in high school together, you wouldn't have made fun of me. I think I will be merciful. I was merciful with Susie. I wasn't so good to that bitchy runaway up in Sleepy Hollow. I sawed at her neck while she was alive. You, I'm going to see to it you bleed out quickly, quickly, quickly. Hey, you, Tyler called.
Stunned, Morrison swung around. He had his knife out and slashing, but it never made contact. Tyler slammed his arm down on Morrison so hard and fast, the knife went flying, and the man screamed in pain. Craig dived for the chair, spinning Sarah around, then cutting the ropes. Sarah saw Alex Morrison was on his knees, staring up at Tyler with pure hatred. His arm dangled at his side.
I didn't shoot him, Craig, Tyler said. Maybe we can get something out of him. After he's locked up, Craig said.
Sarah could hear sirens again. Broken arm or not, Craig Fraser was seeing to it that Alex Morrison was handcuffed. And Sarah was back in Tyler's arms.
It's over, he told her as she broke into sobs. It's truly over.
And she knew it was. Only the nightmares would remain. And if she could wake from them in Tyler's arms, eventually they would be over, too. It was a strange honeymoon, Tyler thought, but a great one. The wedding, just as they had planned, took place at Finnegan's. They'd spent a few days alone in the Poconos, and now Sarah had needed to see Davy, and Tyler understood. Best of all was that Sarah believed he understood. And so buzzers were ringing, bells were chiming, neon lights were flashing. There really was nowhere like Vegas. And it was great. The actual honeymoon part of their extended honeymoon had been personal and intimate and amazing. And now, Sean and Susie had joined them. They were seeing shows, going to music events, hanging out at the hotel's stunning pool. And at night, well, they were making love in their exquisite room. Ever since the day Tyler had rescued Sarah from Morrison, they'd planned their lives and were living them to the fullest. He was coming back to New York. He was going to move his investigations office there. He could consult with police or the FBI, since now he had some useful and friendly connections. And Sarah would keep writing. She was really much better than ever, she assured him. He had given her that, a greater passion for her work. It was their last night in Vegas. Tomorrow they'd head back and get on with their regular lives. Somehow to Tyler, those words held a touch of magic, real magic. They'd weathered so much. They would continue to weather what the future might bring. They were playing slots at the moment, because Davy loved them so much and could spend hours at a machine with a $20 bill. Tyler was pretty sure that Davy's greatest pleasure was hitting the call button for the waitress, smiling broadly when a pretty woman brought him a Shirley Temple, and then grinning toward Tyler or Sarah so that one of them would tip her. Tyler was watching Davy when Sarah finished playing at a silly cow slot machine that said moo every few minutes. He reached out a hand, pulling her over to sit on his lap at the stool where he'd found a place to perch. She leaned against him. They didn't speak. Life. It was full of relationships. Cruel parenting had helped shape Alex Morrison. A brutal lack of empathy and lack of friendship had helped put the nails in the coffin of his psyche. Tyler knew he'd been lucky. He'd had a great family, and so had Sarah. And now, so close, they both had Aunt Renee and Davy. Love was an amazing thing. There could never be too much love for many people in one's life. And, of course, there was that one special love. Some people were lucky enough to know it when they had the chance to hold it, and hold it fast. A forever kind of love. Sarah was smiling at him. He smiled back. And it was evident, of course, but he whispered the words.
I love you, he said.
And I love you, she whispered back. Davy had risen. He threw his arms around the both of them.
And I love you, he said. Come on, we gotta go up. Gotta get home tomorrow. I have a girlfriend, you know.
Laughing, they rose. It was time to go up to their rooms. Tyler thought there was nothing wrong at all with the last night with Sarah in that exquisite bed. This is Saskia Marleveld. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Out of the Darkness, a Finnegan Connection novel from Harlequin Intrigue by Heather Graham. This program was produced by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2018 by Heather Graham Possessory. Production copyright 2018 by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used under license with Harlequin Books, S.A. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.